Hi there, this is Melanie from Do Business Network, and today we have been joined by a long-standing member, Mr. Tony Little from Vindamora Solutions. Good afternoon, Tony. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm very well. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. You know, I always seem to do these on a Friday. Usually when I'm on a podcast, I'll say it's a Friday morning and it's sunny or it's raining, but today it's a Friday afternoon. So the countdown has begun to the weekend. I'm in a good, exceptionally good mood today. Tony, you have what I would call probably not a run-of-the-mill job. Can you please introduce yourself officially to everyone and tell us a little bit about your business?
Well, officially, my name's Tony Liddell. I am the principal archaeologist at Vindamora Solutions Limited. We are a small archaeological practice and consultancy based in Consett, and we deal primarily with archaeological work and built heritage work within the planning system. So basically, if planning conditions are put in place, then we have to deal potentially with that work.
So, Tony, then can you just work, sorry, tell us or put us in the picture of what a typical day would look like at Vindamora Solutions when, and I'm not talking about an admin day where you sat in the office, because obviously you're not long, you're not far from me, are you? So I know what it's like. You've got your admin work, but the interesting stuff, you know, when you're actually out doing some field work, give us a bit of an example of what that entails.
Well, there isn't really a standard day for that. The field work can be anything from recording a derelict building. So you're going around photographing and describing the interior or exterior or both of buildings, whether they're listed buildings or just buildings that are clusters of architectural interest. Or if we're actually doing monitoring work, we can be monitoring groundworks to see if any archaeology comes up. There'll usually be a planning condition in place for archaeological watching brief, as it's called. It's basically the type of job that does what it says on the tin. Archaeologists there watching as building work proceeds in case of archaeological remains coming up. That'll usually only be asked for if the development is within an area of archaeological interest. Or we could be excavating, which is basically where we're actually on site digging a known site, which is usually found through trenching. You might have seen various TV programs, and in some cases, if you're looking at Google Earth, you can see fields full of what looks like long trenches that have been dug. That's usually an evaluation that's taking place by an archaeological company to check to see if there's any below ground archaeological works, sorry, archaeological remains in those areas. So, for example, just to give you an idea of this week, I have been on four different monitoring jobs, costed for three different sets of work on the admin side. I've done a building recording, and I've also been working on some desk-based assessment work, which is basically it's sort of like bread and butter work where you're working out what's already known about an area without putting a spade in the ground. So literally it can change from hour to hour, never mind day to day. So there rarely is an admin day these days. It's an admin hour as and when there is time and space for it.
So when you say monitoring work, what does that mean?
Essentially, if you can imagine the groundwork team as the sort of digging a foundation, there'll be an archaeologist standing literally watching from the side of the trench. Each bucket that comes out from the machine, just a quick check just to see if there's any archaeology there, keeping an eye in the trench to make sure that they're not going to destroy anything. If there is something archaeological in there, basically the archaeologist steps in, records it all, and then the scheme can go ahead again. So not the best in winter for the archaeologist present when you can be standing there for weeks on end in -5, but as long as there's good coffee and a bacon sandwich, everything's fine. So
So can you tell me then, because when I think of an archaeologist, I think of time team. I think of, you know, you've been in a field, sort of seeing what you can, you know, if, what you can find. But I'm assuming then you've got like loads of different what you call customers. You've got customers, I think, which are like government-based customers, so they are wanting you to sort of record stuff that's found on a site that is obviously a heritage site or something like that. Or do you get sort of private contractors as well, like private companies coming to see you and saying, right, we need your help with this. Can you give us
Well,
an
it's for the most part it's developers. So you're looking at sort of the big development companies, but also just your householder developments where they're just putting an extension onto the side of a house. But also say with monitoring schemes, it tends to be sort of utility companies and other bits and pieces like that.
Now I know that, I mean, you've told me in passing loads of interesting little stories. And I'm going to ask you if you could share perhaps an interesting story of something that you've been working on quite recently.
Luckily for clients, recently there's not actually been that much archaeology coming up, so it's probably not much good for an interesting story. But I would say I'd still probably go back to one of the best projects archaeologically in fairly recent history was our excavations at Pendour Hall on West Road, where the Pendour Hall were busy renovating the hall and building an extension on for conferencing purposes, and where the extension was going in was designated as part of the Roman town at Benwell. So we had to excavate the basically the footprint of this new massive extension, and yes, we had the remains of the Roman town to the point we could actually see where the settlement itself had been essentially decommissioned and flattened, and by the Romans themselves, presumably because the town had come to the end of its use. And what you don't want is a derelict town sitting next to a military fort, so for obvious reasons. But it looked as though potentially a lot of the material had been taken and actually used to repair the fort at the time as well. So obviously we're looking at I think there's about 4,000 sherds of Roman pottery have come out. We've got the most intricate Roman glasswork, the usual coins, hobnails from hobnail boots, other bits and pieces like that.
And do you have to declare everything that you find, or do you have to, you know, store it somewhere?
Well, at the moment, bits like that are stored in my archive section and storerooms here. So declaration comes in when obviously if treasure is found, if it comes under the Treasure Trove Act, which obviously has changed recently, which I need to check up on the details of. But it's a lot more archaeological materials now protected under the Treasure Trove laws, essentially to stop people from accidentally forgetting to declare it and making a fortune off it while destroying the archaeology in the process.
It's fascinating for me. I love watching Time Team and things like that. And I always think to myself, I would love to do something like that, but I'm a bit squeamish around human remains. I would love to find treasure, but obviously, like, you know, that whole other side of it must come hand in hand. And I know from talking to you previously, it certainly does, and you find all sorts. But can you tell me what's the most interesting thing that you have found and why?
That's a difficult one because obviously I've been doing this for what 35 years now. Do you mean artifact or do you mean site?
Whatever has interested you the most. Say, for instance, I know I've spoken to you and you showed me a little glass bottle that you found, and it's still got some liquid in, and it's still got the stopper in, isn't it, on the top, and it's never been opened. And I just wondered myself, what did that contain? You know, it's with such an unusual little bottle. And I think actually when we publish the podcast on the DBN website, maybe ask you to share a little picture of a couple of your artifacts so we can put it out there with your podcast. But you know, that was fascinating to me. So of all the things that you've ever found, it may be sort of insignificant to somebody else, but to you, you might have found it really fascinating. So is there anything that sort of springs to mind and why?
I mean, there've been a lot of oddities over the years, that's for want of a better term. As you say, bits like with just the late 19th century glassware and bits and pieces from monitoring jobs in Sunderland, to even just looking at my little display cabinet in the office here, where we've got the remains of what's classed as a stone bow. Which was essentially, it was a gun, but it was designed to look like a crossbow for people who were out hunting and wanted to look posh by firing carrying a crossbow. But it was actually a gun that fired actual bullets rather than arrows. We got part of that. A rather nice find from years ago was a Bronze Age cremation urn that had actually been disturbed by a Roman farmstead that was down near Ferry Hill. Where basically it's and you can actually see the decoration that was pressed into the clay of this cremation urn, why the potter, and you can see the fingernail marks running around the outside and a fingerprint on it and bits and pieces like that.
When does that date back to?
Bronze Age.
Wow.
So quite a considerable number of years ago.
But you know, just to think that somebody's fingerprint from that time, you found some clay work with that fingerprint in it. It just blows my mind, actually. You know, it's almost takes you back into history, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've got bits of Roman pottery from, for example, Pendour Hall, which has got the potter stamp on. And from that, we've been able to trace that basically that the potter, if I remember right, because it's been a while since I've looked at that, was actually based at Corbridge, and it looks as though, because the same pottery has been found across different sites along Hadrian's Wall. Mm-hmm. So you're looking at sort of local trade with local potters across all the areas.
Wow.
And again, looking at Pendour, one of the nice artifacts was a small piece of blown glass, Roman glass, probably from about the mid-second century,
yeah.
That has an air bubble inside with liquid in it. So one of the suggestions that were put forward by the excavation team was that as it's a chunk of blown glass, the reason that you would have an air bubble inside and liquid is perhaps it's actually, shall we say, it contains the DNA of the potter.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
So
it contains spit.
Yeah, I was being polite. So
let's call it what it is. So you've got a bubble of spit. But do you know, that is, it's very, very interesting. And
grow your own Roman in a couple of years, you know.
Yeah, wow. That's amazing. And it's not all, obviously you've got that side of the business, which you've been doing for years. And like I say, whenever we pass each other in the corridor, you're always giving us an update of what you've been up to, which is, like I say, it's brilliant. But tell us a little bit about your blog, because that's more recent, isn't it? Not your blog, your podcast, your own podcast. Yes.
Yeah, that was
a little bit about that.
A little bit of a peculiarity. I've always had a fascination with, shall we say, folklore and things that go bump in the night, ever since I was a teenager. And over the last 20 years, I've had a bit of time researching what I believe is now classed as just anomalous phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea of the podcast is to use the interest in that, because there's a massive amount of interest in anomalous stuff, ghosts and other bits and pieces in the media. And the idea of the podcast is to actually promote local heritage and history using the media of ghost stories and folklore. So the podcast delves into the ghost stories and local folklore, especially your 18th and 19th century stuff, because there's so much of it in the Northeast.
Mm-hmm.
With the idea is, as people are listening to that, they're also soaking up the local history that's being essentially taught or discussed.
Yeah.
So, for example, I'm going to be recording episode 16 tomorrow, And I'm going to be looking at the history and the ghost stories of Featherstone Castle in Northumberland, and the history and the ghost stories of Winter's Gibbet, also in Northumberland. I don't know
Wow.
if you've heard of either. So,
Oh, but Winter's Gibbet sounds interesting.
yeah, that's at the edge of the Northumberland National Park. And it's basically, if you can imagine, do you know what a gibbet is?
No.
Well, when people were hung, in some cases, their bodies were gibbeted, which is basically essentially, I suppose, for want of a better description, a metal cage put around the body,
All
and
right.
it's left out to decompose
Right, yeah.
for all to see as a warning.
So the
So,
gibbet is the metal cage in which the body's put in, yeah.
well, in the case of Winter's Gibbet, it's the name of the site, and what it is, it's a replica. Framework of the gibbet, but the cage isn't there anymore. It's just basically, if I remember right, it's a plaster cast head hanging off a rope there now.
Oh, blooming heck.
But yeah, the Winter was somebody who was gibbeted for, it doesn't sound right, that does it? But yeah, definitely gibbeted for basically murdering somebody nearby. So the his accomplices. I don't know if you need a trigger warning for such things on this podcast, but his accomplices, I believe, were hung and dissected and sent for medical use. And he was hung and put on display. And apparently, when his bits started to rot off, they were collected up and put in a bag and hung back up again until that then fell down. And in theory, what's left of him is buried in the ground around the gibbet.
Do you know,
So.
years ago we didn't mess around, did we? It was like if you it was an eye for an eye. In fact, it was worse, wasn't it? It was just, yeah, I hear these stories and it just sends a shiver down my spine. We were brutal, weren't we?
It's when people say the good old days, it kind of puts a different twist on things. So,
Oh yeah, definitely. And the fact that there was people, were they employed? Is that the right word? To actually find these body parts that had fallen off to hang them back up. It just absolutely freaks me out that.
they wanted to make a point, basically.
And they certainly would. Crikey, you'd be frightened of your own shadow. And it, so if anyone wanted to listen to your podcast, Tony, what's the name of your podcast?
Well, the project as a whole is called Within the Boggart Wood. So you can look up on any podcast platform Within the Boggart Wood. But the name of the podcast itself is just a Northern Counties Paranormal Podcast.
Right, okay,
So
that's brilliant. I think we'll try that.
either of which people will be able to find.
Yeah,
So,
because that's just absolutely fascinating in its own right. And we'll certainly share that on the DBN website as well, so that everyone has the opportunity to tune in. Finally, before we go, people will probably be thinking to themselves, well, this guy is an archaeologist, he's out there in the field, he's, you don't, it's not, you're not a normal 9 to 5 job guy, are you? So why are you a DBN member? And
I,
don't say the bacon butties.
right, I'll rethink that one then. I joined years ago. I started the Vindamora Solutions as a business. I think it was 11 years ago now. And
Yeah,
I
right.
was part of, I joined a small network group that was based out of Medamsley at the
All
time.
right. Yeah,
Trying to get just to basically get a hang of how you run a business, basically. And stayed with them for a while, and when that group started to fold, one of the group members, who incidentally I had actually done some work for, because she lived within Ebchester and within actually the Roman fort in Ebchester, and she needed some work done, so needed somebody there to monitor the groundworks. So she'd suggested DBN, so I came along, and I kind of really I attend as almost it's a support network. Because although I know I'm unlikely to find anybody at DBN who can give me actual work, all the support around running a business is there if you need it. So,
And I thought that's important, that it's an important message because a lot of people think that being a part of a network is just about turning up and networking, but actually there's a lot more to that. And I've spoken to quite a few, well, a lot of small business owners about this, because being a small business owner can be quite lonely sometimes, can't it? It's like
Oh, yes.
you know, you've got a lot of decisions to make, and all of a sudden you are running a business and you don't necessarily have experience of, say, tax or marketing or R&D, or there's loads of different things that's, you know, come up. That, yeah, you're just trying to do what you do best, and there's a lot of other things that comes with the territory of being a small business owner. So having like a support system in place is, you know, a lifeline sometimes.
Absolutely. I mean, I've used especially obviously over recent years the Zoom meetings at DBN. I had certain issues with certain clients. Obviously, names and numbers were never mentioned within the meetings, but I was able to basically brainstorm DBN members as to how they thought I should proceed with certain ways of going about dealing with these problems. And it all helped. So just being able to actually pick up a phone or pop along to an office, or just knowing that that network's there that it can support pretty much any question you've got. And obviously, my business does generate some rather odd questions occasionally.
Yeah,
But
but you know,
yeah.
it's always fascinating. And I know we talked in the past about having a DBN big dig, didn't we?
Yeah, I'm still planning on it, so it's just trying to work out basically how awkward I can make it for the lot of you. So, sorry, did I say that out loud? So
Oh no,
didn't
that's
quite mean to say that out loud. So yeah,
no,
but.
I very much hope that one day we do get to you do. Well, I know you're waiting. There's a few different things that you're waiting for to find out, but I hope it does come off, because I'll be there with my wellies on and just wanting to get involved. I think it's just absolutely fascinating, but more importantly, so the fact that you work in our region, so anything that we do find is part of our local history, which, you know, being born and bred in the Northeast, I've obviously got more interested in that, to find out a little bit more about our local heritage, really. So yeah, absolutely fantastic. So if
And I
anyone,
mean,
sorry, go on.
sorry, I was going to say, if I can sort out basically a dig where members of DBN can take part in, which obviously is the plan, it'll be good from my point of view because it highlights heritage and archaeology, and also the procedures necessary to a lot of local businesses, and that might in turn get passed on to other people in the community, and the knowledge of actually what we do and why we have to do it will become more readily available to those in the area.
Yeah,
So
some really good points there, actually. But if anyone is listening to this podcast and is thinking to themselves, oh, I need to get in touch with Tony for whatever reason, what's the best way for them to do that?
all my contact details are on the company website, which is just vindamorasolutions.co.uk.
Yeah.
Hopefully, as a lot of people struggle with spelling Vindamora, hopefully Mel will be able to put the link on the podcast description.
Yes, I'll certainly do that for you, and I'll also put in your LinkedIn and information about your podcast as well. And also, I hope you can share some images of some local finds that we've just been talking about in this podcast, because I think that's really interesting as well. Especially the little bottle with the, or even the, yeah, the little bit of blown glass with the liquid inside.
Yeah, I'm not sure how well that'll show up on a photograph, but
We'll
I
do
can
our
certainly put together a few bits and pieces, and I'll make sure it's the they're all PG suitable, so
It's been lovely talking to you, Tony, and I'm sure that our DBN members and whoever else listens to this podcast will find it as fascinating as what we do. And we're so pleased to have you as part of our network. Like I say, 11 years
very kind of you.
is a long time. So yes, so we'll hopefully see you at our next. Oh, you're coming along to the Shoebox Expo in
I
October.
am, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh well, yes, I'm looking forward to
I think
seeing.
I did promise David I would behave with what I put in the box though. So
Oh, I'm intrigued now. I can't wait. We'll take plenty of photos and share it on our socials. Right, brilliant. Well, have a lovely weekend, Tony. It's always lovely to catch up, and we'll see you soon.
right, take care of yourself.
Bye.
Bye.